All right. Welcome, everyone. I think we're going to get this started. I've just muted everyone. We've got about 100 people on the line so far. And this call is also going to be recorded. So obviously, I think a lot of you are in the same boat that we are in. We were really surprised by the election results, and our plan for the next, you know, at least the next year and probably many years after that have really changed dramatically in the single payer movement. So I think what we're going to do here, you know, our organization, Healthcare Now, along with Progressive Democrats of America, which is also sponsoring this call, we're working with all of our allies, and we're, you know, listening to our base and talking to our members to get feedback. And we're going to try and, as a coalition, come up with a winning strategy that can let us advance the single payer movement and fight back with a real progressive agenda for healthcare justice that will also resist as much as we can the attacks that are likely to come down the road from Trump and from the GOP Congress on basically every aspect of the healthcare system. So we've invited Lori Kearns, who is a health policy staffer at Senator Sanders' office, and she's going to be describing a little bit to us what we can sort of expect to come out of this Congress and to come from Trump, and possibly some information about the order that it's likely to come at us in. And then myself and Donna Smith from PDA, we'll stop then and we'll give you all a chance to ask Lori questions. And then we're going to move on to sort of talk about organizing strategy for next year, how we fight back and how we advance the movement for single-payer healthcare, because, you know, I think there's a real sense that, you know, it was totally inadequate for the Democratic Party this past year to just rest on the laurels of the Affordable Care Act and think that defending the ACA was adequate as a social justice platform. So I think there's really an opening to move single payer back into the mainstream of politics in the Democratic Party. There's not much of a legislative opening in Congress right now, and not in a lot of states. So we're in a movement building phase, but it's got to be a movement building phase. And I think we have an opportunity to really make some transformational impact in the political system and to build our movement in the process. But a lot of people's lives are at risk here. So that's sort of what's at stake here, and we're going to do some talking, but we're going to do a lot of listening, too. And when the time comes for Q&A, everyone is muted, so you're going to have to press 5-star, and that raises your hand. I've got my computer open here, so a little hand thing goes up, and I can then, in turn, unmute you and give you a chance to talk. And people who have called in this line before, sometimes they'll have your name in here. But if I don't have your name, I'll probably just call you out by your phone number, and you'll get a little notice saying that you've been unmuted as well. So I think I'm going to turn it over to start with to Lori to talk a little bit about what the situation looks like in Congress now, what we should expect, and when we can expect it. I'll give you all a chance to ask her some questions, and then we'll switch over to a discussion of the strategy. Does that sound good? All right. Lori, you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. The floor is yours.
Great. Well, thank you, Ben, for having me, and thank you to all of you who have jumped on the line. I am flattered that you are on the phone listening to me ramble on about budget reconciliation rather than, I don't know, going out and doing whatever it is that you do the night before Thanksgiving. So thank you for joining us. I'll just give you a quick background on me so you know who you're talking to. My name is Lori Kearns. I'm a health policy advisor for Senator Sanders. I've been with him in the Senate for 5 years now, and I am a lawyer by training. I also serve as his counsel on judiciary matters, which involves civil rights, civil liberties, and all that fun stuff. So, unfortunately, I have no good news about what's going to happen in Congress. This, as Ben said, as we have all said, this did not turn out the way that we thought it was going to. And so suddenly everything's on the table for repeal and tearing apart and all of these programs that we may not have loved, and they're not perfect, but we don't want them to disappear entirely. So I think we'll just I think I'll just give a quick rundown. I don't know everyone's background on the phone here, how much you all know about the budget process in Congress, how any of this works. So if it sounds like I'm talking down to all of you, I apologize. It's not my intention. But so really quick, what Congress is supposed to pass a budget every year. This obviously usually doesn't happen, has not often happened in recent years. This is separate from the appropriations process. The budget is sort of the blueprint for how we should spend money, and then appropriations is how we're actually going to spend money. So the budget process itself results in a budget resolution, which is non-binding and does not get sent to the president for his signature or veto. But it can produce something called reconciliation instructions, which you all may have heard about. And these are instructions to committees to take actions that have an effect on taxes or spending, essentially. So the bill that then comes out of the reconciliation process can become law, can have the force of law. And the thing about reconciliation is that it is a privileged matter, so it can't be filibustered the way that other bills can and will be and have been. So you only need 50 votes to pass it. This is how we got such wonderful pieces of legislation as welfare reform and the Bush tax cuts, and this is how we wound up passing part of the ACA after we lost the seat in Massachusetts and dropped down below the filibuster threshold in 2010. So last year, both houses of Congress passed a reconciliation bill that tore apart major parts of the ACA, which, of course, the president vetoed. But we expect them to use that as a blueprint for what they're going to try to do this year. And what they did last year was what you can do through reconciliation, this is where it gets tricky, is that you can take actions that have an effect on spending or the deficit, but you can't take actions that don't have an effect on spending but change policy. So it's a little complicated, for lack of a better term. So you can't do an outright repeal of the ACA through reconciliation is the bottom line here. But they can and will, we expect them to, do things to completely undermine it. For example, you can't repeal the individual mandate entirely, but you can say you can change the penalty for the mandate to zero, which in effect gets rid of the mandate, but the Senate parliamentarian who makes the final call on all of these things says that that's not a policy change. So they dialed down the penalty on the individual mandate to zero. They got rid of all of the money for the Medicaid expansion. They defunded Planned Parenthood, and we're expecting to see that as the basis again this year. Now, when is this happening? It could happen as soon as January, because Congress has not – they're supposed to do one budget for each fiscal year. As many of you probably know, the federal government operates on an October 1st to September 30th fiscal year. So we're currently in FY17, and Congress never passed a budget for FY17. So they could do one January 4th as soon as the new Congress is sworn in if they want to, and what we've been hearing is that they do want to do that. So you could do that. We could be looking at a budget resolution at some point in the next 6 to 10 weeks perhaps. So this is going to happen fast, and we need to be geared up. They could then do the resolution to plan for FY18, and that's when we expect them to get into other things that are on their wish list, like tax reform, Medicare privatization, capping the tax deduction for employer-sponsored health insurance, and all of those great things. So then what happens? What we've been hearing is that Republicans want to do a repeal and delay plan because they haven't settled on a replacement plan yet. As we all know, they've had 7 years to come up with one and haven't figured one out, so I don't expect that this is going to go well for them, but stranger things have happened. So they seem to think that they can repeal the ACA immediately so they can tell everyone that they've repealed the ACA, but give it a 2-year delay. So it wouldn't take effect until probably January 1st, 2019. And they figure that then they'll have time to come up with a replacement plan in those intervening 2 years. Well, it's more like intervening year just because of the way that all of the, you know, people have to sign up for health insurance. Insurance companies have to make plans available to sell. They have to make the rates available to everyone. And those things all have to be done in a timely fashion. So they're not going to have 2 years. And meanwhile, we're going to have the 2018 midterm elections to deal with. So the other part of all of this is that Senator Sanders is the ranking member. He's the top Democrat on the budget committee. So it is going to be his job to lead the fight against the repeal of the ACA. And I don't want any of you to mistake that just because he's going to be out there defending the ACA from being destroyed means that he wants it to continue. Obviously, Senator Sanders is a longstanding proponent of single payer. He very strongly believes that health care is a right, not a privilege, and he is going to be defending that throughout. But it will be his job in the Senate as ranking member of the budget committee to stop them from using the budget process in this manner. But he's also been appointed to Senate leadership team as the head of outreach for Senate Democrats, and I think that that's where he will want to be connecting with all of you and not in your communities and hearing what you're hearing and finding a way to help you all get everyone, keep everyone energized. You know, we've seen a huge outpouring in the past couple weeks from people saying, you know, that they want to get involved, they want to stay involved, they want to know how they can fight, and that's great, but we need to figure out a way to sustain that level of energy, and I think that's something that, that Ben and Donna are going to talk about. So I am going to pause there and see if there's any questions.
Yeah, and I'm gonna clear the hands for a second, and anyone who has a question, just hit 5-star. Your hand will come up, and I think we can take about 15 minutes of Q&A if we need that much. And if you could just sort of limit your questions for now to the GOP attacks, what's happening in Congress, then we're going to broaden the discussion to organizing for the single-payer movement after that. All right, so phone number ending in 0702, I'm unmuting you. Jump right in.
Thank you for the – this is Randy Hicks in Sacramento, and we're big single-payer advocates out here. In California, we're going to introduce a single-payer bill. But my question was more about SSI, Social Security, and their plan to make it an investment program. Are they going to touch SSI, SSP, and what we can do about it? I'm going to contact my Congresswoman, Doris Matsui, and my senator. What can we do about stopping them from taking down SSI, SSP?
Sure. So the one saving grace of the budget reconciliation process is that you cannot use it to make any changes to Social Security. So if they want to make changes to Social Security, they're going to need 60 votes in the Senate. And obviously that would require them to have Democratic votes. And this is where, and, you know, they tried this during the Bush years. They didn't have enough Republican votes. So I think that's really where all of you come in, being able to contact your members of Congress and demand in no uncertain terms that you do not want any changes to Social Security.
Thank you very much.
We're also going to talk a little bit later on the call. We had an interesting conversation with we had a coalition meeting in D.C. Earlier in the week. Okay. And the group Social Security Works talked with us about the strategy they took to defend Social Security by fighting to expand it as sort of a model for you know, roughly what we're trying to do, you know, defending Medicare by trying to expand it to everyone. So hold that thought, and we'll come back to that more in the organizing section. All right, phone number ending in 6541. You should be unmuted. Jump right in.
Yes, thank you for letting me speak. My name is Penn. I'm with the People's Email Network. The election result was not a surprise to us. Not only wasn't it a surprise, we predicted this entire dynamic 6 years ago. When the ACA was being passed, we were violently against it. We thought it was a total corporate sellout. And we predicted that over a series of elections that the Democrats would lose their majorities in Congress and the White House. And if you want to look that up, it was published in Op-Ed News in 2010 under the Democratic Party's plan to throw the next couple elections. I'd like to just take a moment to take some very strong issue with some of the things I've heard already. First of all, this concept that there's no legislative opening in Congress, that is just the worst sort of defeatist talk I've ever heard in my life. If there are people out there that believe in single payer, they need to speak out. We need 10 million people to tell members of Congress, and the Democrats in particular, to stop playing this game, this con on the American people, which is exactly why we're in this situation we are right now. The best thing I've heard in this call so far is that the Republicans are going to try to delay. That sounds like a vacuum to me. And what has to happen is the Democratic Party in one voice, and that includes Mr. Sanders, has got to say single payer and single payer only. The ACA is a dead body. It's a corpse. It's a loser. If you try to hang on to any part of it, you're going to get crushed in the midterms.
All right. Thank you for your comments. I'm going to go on. This sounded more like a comment than a question. Next up, phone number ending in 0615. You should be unmuted. Jump right in.
Yeah. This is Brian from Michigan. I have a couple questions. Well, the first one is I want to get involved in my local area with, you know, an organization to volunteer mm-hmm. regarding this issue. I'm just wondering if there is an organization in my area where I can actually get involved locally.
Where in Michigan are you?
I'm in the Detroit area. I'm in the suburbs of Detroit. So
yeah, we do have Healthcare Now has a chapter in the Detroit area. It's mostly retired auto workers that sort of hold down that group. But I'd be happy to, if you want to send me an email at ben@healthcarenow.org, I'd be happy to put you in touch with our activists there. And I'm sure Progressive Democrats of America also has a chapter in Michigan. So if you just follow up with me after the call, we will put you in touch with activists there.
What is it, ben@healthcarenow.org or .com?
Yeah. Healthcare is all one word, -now.org. And okay. Also, if you go to our website, healthcarenow.org, you can find our contact info there.
Okay.
But thanks for volunteering. That's the most important part, I'd say. So.
Well, the other question I had, though, is I'm wondering if we can get a single-payer bill similar to the one that John Conyers introduced. See, because he introduced a bill, right when this health care debate was being, waged in the very beginning. I'm just wondering if we could get a single-payer bill.
That's a great question. So John Conyers is still the sponsor of the H.R. 676 in the House, and it's going to be reintroduced again. That's also a good segue for us to ask Lori about Senator Sanders is going to be introducing a single-payer bill as well on the Senate side. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, Lori?
Sure. So Senator Sanders has long had a single-payer bill in the Senate. It is the same as Congressman McDermott's bill in the House, H.R. 1200. We did not get the chance to introduce it this Congress. The senator was a little busy this year, as you may have known. But he does and has said multiple times he plans to reintroduce it in the next Congress. Like I said, he is not giving up the fight for single payer by any means. The ACA is not his favorite piece of legislation, but he always describes it as a good first step. And, you know, when you're looking at a scenario where 22 million people might lose their health insurance. That's not, we don't want to go backwards, but we will, we're going to continue pushing forward, and part of that is reintroducing the single-payer bill.
Yeah, so to the caller's question, there will be single-payer bills in both the House and the Senate. And I'm going to get to some other questions here. One other question I had for you, Lori, could you talk a little bit about, you focused on the Affordable Care Act and the likely attacks GOP are going to make on the Affordable Care Act. Can you talk a little bit about Medicaid and Medicare as well? We've heard less about that from Trump, but a lot from the GOP over the past, several years.
Yeah, Trump's been a little, well, I guess Trump on this, mm-hmm. for lack of a better term. He has said on the record that nobody is going to lose their health insurance on his watch, and that he's supported single payer at times, or the idea that government should guarantee health care to everyone, and we're like, great, we're on board. But then that's obviously not Paul Ryan's plan. So there's a couple things that Republicans have been talking about doing to Medicaid. The first is obviously getting rid of the money for the Medicaid expansion. The second thing is block granting Medicaid, and you're going to hear about block grants a lot because I think they also want to do this to the food stamp program. So the idea of block grants is just the federal government would just give each state a specific sum of money and say, here's all your money for Medicaid. Go figure out what to do with it. And generally that's going to result in fewer people having coverage. You're going to hear a lot about flexibility and freedom and how states need this, and that's simply not true. Don't buy a word of it. This is just, it's a cut by another name is all it is. Because the other thing with block grants is that once you start them, they very rarely keep pace with inflation. They certainly are not going to keep pace with medical inflation. And you're going to see the federal government, giving fewer and fewer dollars to states for Medicaid until you finally probably phase out the program entirely. Medicare, they're talking about vouchers or privatization. Again, flexibility and freedom, they're two favorite words. And this could come in a few different forms. You could just move more people off of original Medicare onto Medicare Advantage plans. You give people vouchers or tax credits to go buy health insurance through an exchange, which may sound familiar. But again, we would expect that those vouchers would not keep pace with inflation or the cost of living or any of those indexes that we use to increase the vouchers. And would basically just be another way to undermine the entire program with, again, the idea of getting rid of it entirely.
Right. And both of these things would both basically end Medicaid and Medicare's entitlement programs where, once you meet the criteria and you're on the program, the federal government agrees to cover you or to match in the case of the state programs. So it would be much like welfare reform, the end of Medicaid and Medicare as we know it. But these would both have to go through legislation, that's correct?
Nope, you can do these through reconciliation too, unfortunately.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, it is.
There have been
a couple. Senator Cassidy from Louisiana the other day gave an interview where he said that he is not supportive of Medicare privatization. Mm. So that's already one Republican on record, and we really only need three.
All right, well, we've got our organizing work cut out for us. I'm going to take two more questions on this before we switch over to the organizing side of things. Let's go with Rita in Georgia. Should be unmuted there.
Yeah, hey, excuse me, thanks, Ben. Lori pretty much answered what my question was going to be, which was, Medicaid block grants. And, just so thank you for for telling us that, and just to sort of underscore the type of devastation that means in particular to southern states, because so much of this is framed, you know, in a very reactionary states' rights strategy, which is totally devastating to southern states, and obviously, you know, is somewhat reflected as having moved north in the election results. So thanks for that about Medicaid, as well as the projected privatization of Medicare. And I guess that I was just trying, you know, to me this sort of sums up the question of how you both defend and sort of move on the offensive at the same time, and that seems to focus around public health insurances and the risk, you know, in particular to those, to Medicaid and Medicare. So that's just another thought for the conversation. But thank you for your, you know, for your comments.
Yeah, thanks, Rita. And we will get more to fighting on offense while we play defense in just a few minutes as well. All right, I'm going to take a couple more calls. Let's go with Don in California. You should be unmuted.
Hi, this is Don in San Francisco. I strongly believe the best way to stop all these cuts is to fight for Medicare for all. So my question is, what's the soonest that we can have a bill in the Senate from Sanders?
That's a good question. We haven't settled on an exact date. It's still
January.
Still, I can't tell you.
Okay. Well, you heard what I think is needed.
Mm-hmm.
Please come
Absolutely.
Through.
Good question, Don. We'll have to keep everyone posted by email. You know that as soon as that bill drops, we'll be all over it. There has not been a strong history of support for the Sanders bill in the Senate. There's been, you know, far more support on the House side, and I think we need a lot more work on the Senate side. And I think especially after this last election and how well Bernie did in the elections and how central Medicare for All was, I think we'll have a better shot bringing on. I mean, we actually have a lot of senators who were co-sponsors of H.R. 676 in the House when they were on the House side, and they're now on the Senate side and have not co-sponsored the single-payer bill yet on the Senate side. So I think that'll be an important emphasis when it drops. I'm going to take a couple more questions here. Let's see. I'm going to go to phone number ending in 9612. You should be unmuted.
Okay, that would be me. This is Peter from Oakland, California.
Hi there.
I wanted to raise something that came up at the founding meeting of the Medicare for All Collaborative a couple of Saturdays ago. It's right after the election. The point was made that actually in a state with a favorable, you know, with a legislature that was maybe a little more progressive than, say, they have down south, the use of block grants might create an opening to push for the capturing of federal funds for a state single-payer bill. Which I think people might know came fairly close to passing in California until Schwarzenegger vetoed it, and which Governor Brown, his successor, basically refused to allow to go through because he said there was no funding. I just wanted to throw that out there and get a response about whether that's how realistic a strategy that is. The other point I wanted to raise is something that came up in a one-on-one conversation toward the end of that meeting, which was that possibly this might be a good time to talk about a multi-state strategy in terms of single-payer plans. If there are states which are of similar minds, for instance, so Oregon, California, and Washington, whether what the mechanics would be of setting up some kind of a multi-state risk pool for a single-payer system that would be a lot more financially robust than a single state.
Mm-hmm. Good questions. And, Lori, if you want to have a comment on the Medicaid block grant thing, I can quickly say that, I mean, it wouldn't, if there's a switch to Medicaid block grants, as Rita said, it would be devastating to, well, basically all states, particularly states in the South, and it would be a not-so-subtle way for the Republicans to, you know, phase out federal support for Medicaid. So it's not something that we would ever want. It would just be devastating for the people who rely on it. It would mean that a single-payer plan wouldn't need a waiver for Medicaid, but historically, it hasn't been that hard to get Medicaid waivers, is my sense. Laura, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, we were thinking about that, about what effect obviously a Medicaid block grant would have on Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is that we don't know, because we don't know what the size of the block grant would be, what it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Before the ACA was implemented, Vermont had other ways of insuring people at least up to 300% of the federal poverty line. And we were kind of curious, like, would Vermont be able to just go back to that program? And the answer is they don't know, because they don't know what the block grant would look like.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of states currently have what are called 1115 waivers for their Medicaid program, which is the section of the code that the waiver authority is in. And some states have used them to add things like work requirements, as Governor Pence added
in
Indiana. But other states, like Vermont, have used them to figure out how to do meaningful health care reform for all of their populations. So I would expect that in a block grant situation, you are going to see states like Vermont and California and Massachusetts try to make lemonade out of lemons, and you're going to see other states say, thanks for the money, we're taking it and going home, you know?
Mm-hmm. And we'll see growing geographic disparities across the country, which are already pretty extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Very good question. See, I think we have time for one or two more questions. There's someone whose number doesn't show up, so you'll just have to – it'll say when you're unmuted, just jump in there.
Hi, Walter from Philadelphia.
Hey there. Oh, hey, Walter.
I wanted to know if Sanders is planning to have congressional hearings again. I realize he has a full agenda, and certainly with the introduction of a Senate bill, that would be an opportune time to do that. But for many of us, the opportunity for having congressional hearings around single payer is one of the ways in which we can put it in front of the public and have a real national debate about the issue. And I think timing right now is important, because if they do repeal and replace, I'd love them for the national dialogue to include single payer as the replacement plan.
Hmm.
Yeah, we would love to do hearings on single payer. We'd love it. That'd be great. Unfortunately, we're in the minority, and we do not get to decide the hearing topics. So it's a little bit out of our hands there.
Hmm. And sometimes in the past we've done, you know, non-official hearings, booking rooms in Congress, and maybe that's what Walter was thinking of. But obviously we can't have official hearings. Actually, when it was looking like the Senate might swing back to the Democrats, that was one of the things we were really looking forward to, is the possibility of meaningful hearings.
Oh, I had a list of hearing topics that I wanted us to start having,
right.
And yeah.
Good question. Well, maybe we can come up with something that is not an official hearing to meet the same goals that Walter is talking about. All right, I'm going to take one final question. A lot of people still have their hands up, so I apologize to everyone else. We'll get to you in the sort of last section of the call, if I can. Phone number ending in 8641. Jump in there.
Thank you very much, Ben. It's Andy Coates. I'm the immediate past president of PNHP.
Andy.
Lori, thank you so much. I admire you. I don't want to catch you in the crossfire. I think that you're a brilliant woman and an honest person and an activist. And what I heard from you was that the senator who ran for president on a bold, advancing agenda that we need to move this country forward is now a Democratic Party functionary working for Democratic Party leadership, not single payer. And that's fine. I respect that. But I think that our movement needs to kind of take a breath and think what that means. Because in the wake of this election, Senator Sanders' message that moved millions, and I mean millions of people, will still move millions of people. And we need him, and we need you to think about the fact that we are going to still be moving for 676, single payer. Again, I really do respect you personally. This is not about trying to catch you in the crossfire or give you heat. But I think that the people on this call need to think about building a mass movement to keep on our fight. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks, Andy. It's good to hear from you. And the, I think part of your concern here and the concern that I've been hearing from activists is because I can't give you a firm date on when we're going to be reintroducing the bill. And it's that does not speak to – that's not because he's unsure about introduction or anything. It's that Senator Sanders very strongly believes in single payer, but he also very strongly believes that we need a $15 minimum wage and that we need environmental protections and – that we need, like, we have, gosh, I can't even tell you, probably 50 bills lined up that he wants to introduce across the entire spectrum. And so that is more a function of finding the right time for each. Because if we dump them all out there on day one, then, it's like, we didn't, like, they all get lost in the noise, if that makes sense.
am I unmuted?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
That's all cool, but this is a single-issue call, my dear. We are all on this call because we believe that this issue of health care for our people can transform this country. I don't think that's the point. We are not in a multi-issue campaign here. This is the health care now call. We are here for health care now. Health care now. And that's why I tried to be kind and say we didn't want to catch you in the crossfire, because we need a movement. We need a mass movement, and we also, by history, have the chance for a mass movement in the wake of this terrible election result, this Trump election result. Now is the time for a mass movement for health care for all. Health care now is the demand of our time, and some of us see this, and I think that Senator Sanders is missing that. That's okay. That's his thing. That's not my thing. My thing is that I know from my children and my parents and my grandparents and my patients, and they're from their children and their parents and their grandparents, I know that this is the issue of our time. And that's the point of this telephone call tonight. And that's why everyone is on it. That's why Ben got hundreds of people to call in. And that's the point of this call. I'm sorry. Forgive me, all of you, for having a small tirade, but healthcare now is the point of this telephone call, and we have a bill in Congress, and sad to say, it's not Senator Sanders' bill. It's John Conyers' bill, H.R. 676. I'll be quiet now. Thank you all.
No, I appreciate that, and part of the reason that I am here and I'm doing this call is to listen to all of you and to hear your numbers and to be able to go back to Senator Sanders and say to him, you know, here is what this community wants. Here is what we're hearing. You know, I keep encouraging all of you to call your members of Congress, because that's what matters to us. Like, he asks every single day, how many calls have we gotten on this issue? What are we hearing about? What letters have we gotten? But I also can't promise you that I don't want to promise you things that I can't deliver on, which is that promising that we're going to introduce this bill on January 3rd. I don't have that authority. That's not up to me. That's not to say that I don't want to do it, but that's not my call to make.
And let's also bear in mind that, you know, H.R. 676 does not get introduced right at the beginning of the year either. Conyers has to wait until the number 676 comes up again so he can get it. So we play this waiting game with both bills until they drop. But we will be 100% behind them when they do come out. So I think we should probably turn the call now to organizing, just like Andy was talking about, since especially from our perspective, this is about building a mass movement for single payer, and using this opportunity, which mostly consists of terrible things happening to good people, to grow this movement and make sure that we right this ship politically over the next couple of years. So I don't know. Donna, do we have you on the call? I don't see you on the call, so I don't know if we have Donna here. Jump in at any time if you're on, Donna. I sent you sort of a code to log in with a speaker code. But until Donna gets on, or if she's not able to make it, I'm just going to sort of try and give a quick synopsis of there's a big coalition meeting that Andy was at also, actually, and that Walter was also at in D.C. on Monday to talk about, you know, how do we fight this fight over the next year? How do we coalesce the forces of the single parent movement? I feel like there was actually a lot of consensus that, you know, what we saw, this sort of shocking election outcome, part of it was that, you know, there was sort of a defense of the ACA, which I think is all right in a sense, and that obviously the Affordable Care Act helped a lot of people gain insurance coverage, gain access to care. But it is so far from adequate for healthcare justice and so far from adequate for people's healthcare needs. It cannot possibly serve as a vision, something that we're fighting for, that the Democratic Party is fighting for, or whatever party we belong to. So for us, it's tempting in this moment with all these programs under attack to say, let's just fight to keep them and keep what we have. We do have to do that. But if that's our vision, you know, let's try to get back to what we have, you know, in the beginning of 2016. It's going to fall just as flat, and our movement is not going to grow. And we're not going to have sort of a Democratic Party that's fighting more for working people's needs, which includes single payer, but also so many other issues, like most of which Senator Sanders has been a champion of for God knows how long. So we really need to, as Rita said, fight offense while we're fighting defense, while we're playing defense, while we're trying to oppose all these cuts. We really need to have a positive vision for single payer health care that resonates broadly with the public. And one of the more interesting presentations we got at the meeting in D.C. was from this group Social Security Works. And you may remember that there was a time not that long ago, back in 2012, I think it was, when Social Security was under attack, and it looked almost inevitable that Social Security was going to be sort of shrunken and that we would always be seeing cuts. And even Obama was sort of on board this. Well, Social Security Works mounted a campaign to oppose the cuts by calling for the expansion of Social Security, which is sort of the definition of playing defense by playing offense. And it was very successful, not just this organization alone. There was a mass movement. But Social Security, the cuts were stopped, and as of this year, it has basically become the mainstream position of the Democratic Party to fight for the expansion of Social Security. And I think that's sort of the type of thing we have to be able to do, right? We have to be able to say that these cuts are not okay. It's not okay to block grant Medicaid, to voucherize Medicare, to privatize the Veterans Administration. We haven't talked about that, but that's going to happen. The other thing we haven't talked about is probably the employer tax deduction, that every time an employer contributes to the health care for their workers, they don't have to pay taxes on it. The GOP is talking about going after that as well. That really has unions terrified. So everyone is under attack, and we have to fight these, but we can't just defend the status quo. It's not going to resonate with folks, and we're going to be, you know, we're not going to politically advance this movement. So that's what we're talking about, and we're going to try to launch.
Hey, Ben, I finally made it through this, Donna.
Great, Donna. So I just started talking about DC debriefing.
Yeah, I've been listening. You did great. You have to be smarter than the actual code, and I wasn't.
Oh, okay. So were you on at least for most of it, though?
Yeah, I've been on for the whole time. Is Lori still on?
Oh, fantastic. All right,
yes,
you just weren't showing up as a speaker on my thing, so I wasn't sure if you were here. Sorry about that.
Okay, no worries.
So do you want to jump in here? I'm mostly interested to hear what other people think, where they're at. You know, we did a survey with our members, and so far over, I think, about 600 of our members have sort of filled out the survey and said what they're worried about in terms of their own healthcare losing and signing up to take on different roles, you know, potentially being a point person for their their member of Congress, you know, helping out with rapid response networks, like taking on different roles to fight back. But we're going to try and pull together this big national coalition of organizations, including PDA, Healthcare Now, and, you know, work with our legislative allies. But I really want to hear from the folks on this call about what they're worried about, how they're thinking about organizing where they are. But Donna, you want to talk about some of your takeaways from the meeting you've seen?
Yeah, I'll just take a minute to just give you some of my perspectives. And I want to, first of all, thank Lori very much for your work, not only now but previously. The first time I met you, we were working on the American Health Security Act with Senator Sanders and Representative McDermott for the first time years ago, and I've always appreciated your hard work and your honesty and your clarity. I also want you to communicate to Senator Sanders on my behalf, on behalf of PDA. We are so grateful on this eve of Thanksgiving for him raising the issue of Medicare for All and single payer so loudly and clearly across the generations. We have now deep support for single payer and for Medicare for All among young progressives, which is very exciting. PDA is organizing, as you already know, chapters of young progressives demanding action that were born of the College Students for Bernie movement. And we're so thrilled about that. And they count among their top four issues, single payer, Medicare for All. We could not have said that a year ago or 2 years ago, and we owe that to Senator Sanders running for the United States presidency. I am so grateful to him for that, and I'm grateful for you for working for him, so thank you for that. I also want folks on this call to know PDA has been an ally of Healthcare Now's for a very long time. We have stood for single payer and will continue to do so. We anticipate we're relaunching on its 10th anniversary, the Healthcare Now Warfare campaign in a big way on Saturday, December 10th. We're calling for vigils all across the country with our chapters to recognize International Human Rights Day, which occurs every December 10th. To coincide with remembering how Eleanor Roosevelt worked on the Universal Declaration for Human Rights way back in Harry Truman's administration. So the United States has been a party to this agreement in the United Nations for a good many years, but unfortunately, certainly in the area of health care and in other areas, we are not living up to our own parts of the declaration that we helped draft so many years ago. So PDA is absolutely committed to keeping everyone organized. The other meeting that I was a part of last week, extremely important and exciting for single payer folks, the People's Summit planning meeting. Those of you who were lucky enough to attend the People's Summit in Chicago this past summer, it brought together members of our other allies, National Nurses United, Physicians for a National Health Program, Democratic Socialists of America, PDA, and many, many others, Code Pink, lots of folks who are working diligently on this issue, along with many other parts of Senator Sanders' agenda. I think one of the things we came away from the People's Summit with, too, and this speaks to some of what Lori was mentioning, and the reality is we all win when we all win. We have to fight. We have to be able to fight together for economic and social justice. And we are more our friends with those who are fighting for minimum wage to be $15 an hour than we are with people who are certainly arguing in a different arena for different issues. So on a personal front, I shared with the meeting in D.C., and I want to share with all of you, I am very frightened about the repeal of parts of the Affordable Care Act. I very much know that where we need to go is to single-payer health care. But as a 62-year-old female who is covered on her state exchange with health insurance, it terrifies me, and I mean terrifies me, to have to face the last 3 years before I'm Medicare eligible, if Medicare is still eligible to me at 65, without any protection for being able to get coverage. So while I will never, never give up the fight to get to single payer, and that is going to always be my priority, to fight for single payer health care and reform, I also have to keep an eye on what's happening to me in terms of the very immediate threat to my access and my coverage to health care as a cancer survivor, as a woman who deals with a variety of things like many of us do as we get a little bit older, I cannot survive without access to health care. So having said that, I hope everybody will think about joining with PDA in a vigil or an action. Also hope that you'll look to Healthcare Now chapters and or PDA chapters in your area. We have them growing all across the country. Part of the wonderful thing we see coming out of this horrible election result is we are seeing double and triple the number of people we normally have at chapter meetings show up, because people are now not only frightened, but they are energized into knowing that they themselves personally must do more, they must step up. So this mass movement, it is growing, and it is up to us to make sure that we tend it well and move it forward. And I really appreciate you, Ben, and I appreciate you, Lori. And to everyone on this call, I am thankful for you, and I am thankful you're standing with us at the barricades. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, thanks, Demet, and thanks, everyone. We've got about 130 people on the call right now, Thanksgiving Eve, so that's quite an accomplishment for all of you to be joining us. I'm going to try to get to as many questions and comments as I can. I think about at least 10 people have their hands up, so I'm just going to ask if everyone can be brief and as succinct as you could possibly can, just out of courtesy to others. What I'm going to do right now, I think I'm going to take three or four comments or questions in a row. And if there are questions in there, then we can sort of take them after we've had a few people in a row. We can stack them up. So we'll start off with a phone number ending in 9546. You should be unmuted. Take it away.
Yes, hello. My name is Fiona Humphrey, and I live in the state of Washington. And just as a little bit of background, I have been a SHEBA volunteer for 13 years, so I help people enroll in Medicare. I counsel them and help them onto it. I've also been a navigator for the Washington Health Plan Finder, so I've been working with people on the new exchange here in Washington, and I've been working with people on Medicaid a lot as well. And over my years, my observation has been with all of these new, including Part D coming in, is that the American people are really confused and don't really understand their health benefits, their insurance, even the terminology. A lot of them don't even know what single payer means. So I think one of our major efforts during the next few years is an explanation, you know, of what we're trying to do. And hopefully Bernie Sanders, a single payer, can help us with that, explain to people exactly what it means, because it's too easy for the Republicans to turn around and say it's socialism, it's government takeover. But I think once they get to find out a little bit more, they need to understand, because they really don't. There's a study shown that most of the people even on Medicare now don't even understand what it is, how their benefits work. Mm. So we have an education issue. And I think that would really help, and I would hope that we would try to get all of the people that are concerned about this involved, if they know and they understand it, to help reach out to try and educate our entire public on what health care is and what it means and the ins and outs of it, because they don't really get it. And I don't think they can really support something they don't quite understand. And
yeah,
I think that's part of our issue with all that.
And you're in a good position, better than most of us, to make that point. So thank you, and I'm going to stack up. Oh, sorry, I muted you prematurely. I apologize for that. I'm going to take two or three more. I'm just going to stack up here and try and move through them. Phone number ending in 4113. Go ahead.
Hello, Ben, and thanks for taking my call. You know, I think I
just introduce yourself real quickly. Sorry.
Yeah, this is Gus. I'm calling from Central Florida, the Orlando area, and just a little bit of stats on what's going on here with ACA. Essentially, you know, we have one provider down here right now, which is Florida Blue, and you know, the plan has increased by 53% for many people, particularly those folks that actually make a little bit more money than your average household. And you know, we talked about the fact that we have to hang on to ACA, and ACA is a good thing, but it's dying a horrible death. You know, I have friends here. They're just not going to sign up, okay, because it's not affordable. So it's a contradiction in terms. And so with respect to the couple of callers, previous callers, you know, we need to this has to be something that we have to develop bottoms up as opposed to tops down. Because if we don't find enough commonality amongst the states over here to fight for single payer, it's not going to happen. And, this is one of the things that Trump's harped on, right? And I think that it also included a good push toward him getting not only the nomination but winning this, this election. So I'll leave it at that. And, you know, so I am here to attempt to organize something. I'm actually going to do something on Meetup. I'm going to actually, put something on Meetup and see if I can get some people to join me and to start talking about it and see where it goes.
Great. And we have Healthcare Now is – we have a lot of members in Florida, but very little formal organization. I think PDA is a little better in terms of having organization on the ground. And one of the things we're going to try and do in this next year is, as we're mobilizing people, try and get new groups started in the areas where we don't have organizations. So we'd love to be in touch with you after this call. Thanks so much.
Hassan, you're right. And PDA has a huge presence in Florida.
Mm. Right, so we're going to have to connect up with you guys. Phone number ending in 4134. You're on.
Hi, this is Cynthia in California, and thank you for having this call. I'm not sure exactly how to formulate this question, but we have something very dynamic going on here in California, which is the Cal Exit campaign movement, which is in its really not in its infancy. It's 2 years old, but because of the result of this election, it has come to, explosion to take form. And yesterday, the campaign submitted the ballot measure to the Attorney General's office in Sacramento. And so my question is, there are what the previous two callers were saying about the need for education on the issue of single-payer. Some of my close co-campaign workers don't even know what single-payer is. And so what I want to know is, how do we interface the teaching to the general public about how we can interface that in with the exit independence movement? We have two things going on here. We have to educate about why California will be more effective in moving the progress of this country forward with single payer as a huge part of it. How can we interface that teaching?
All right, thanks for that comment. And that is the first I've heard of the Cal Exit movement, so that is very interesting. I just want to acknowledge the folks that it's 9 p.m. Eastern time right now, which is supposed to be the end of our call. We have enough people who have been waiting patiently that I'm going to extend this call to 9:10 Eastern time, and I'm going to try to get as many of you as possible. I suspect we're not going to get to everyone. But, again, please try and keep your comments and your questions brief and succinct so we can get to as many people as possible. Phone number ending in 1298. You're on.
Yeah, my name is Dick Connolly. I'm here in Evansville, Indiana, deep in the red state of Indiana. And I have a number of comments I'd like to make, but I'd really want to ask one particular sort of strategic question. And that is, I have tried down here, as have many others, to try to address the public with issues with respect to single payer and healthcare in general. I taught bioethics at the University of Evansville for 40 odd years, and I've tried to do public fora on single payer and what its advantages are, and so on. And people generally are very receptive if they are there. I don't got huge crowds there, but I just was curious if anyone has suggestions for things that can be done in a state like Indiana, where even the Democrats, and I think here former Senator Bayh and Senator Donnelly, won't really get aboard or even, in my mind, give fair consideration to single payer. What sort of strategy do you suggest for trying to get single payer more out in the open in a state like Indiana? When I talk to people individually or in small groups and explain what single payer is, they seem very interested. They seem to be supportive, but it's just difficult to get that message out.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I can take a stab at that as an organizer, and Donna, jump right in as well. I think it's important to understand sort of where your state is at in terms of level of support for single-payer healthcare and level of organization as well. I think a lot of times folks want to jump to the end game, which is having, you know, all of your legislators sign on. But it probably may be that that's the first step. The early steps really have to be about base building. They have to be doing exactly the things you're talking about, giving presentations to small groups, but make sure after each presentation you have a sign-up sheet, you give people your contact information, and you start growing the list of folks around the state who are interested, and then follow up with those folks and ask if they want to get involved, if they want to learn how to become a speaker, learn how to talk to other organizations. And this kind of organizing is a real grind. It takes a long time. It takes a lot of people to do it. It's sort of the unglorified part. It's not like a big rally, and it's not, you don't get press coverage for it, but it's the most important sort of day-to-day organizing work that grows movements over time. And then that way you can grow a single-payer presence over time to the point where you have the capacity and the power to move larger institutions and move your members of Congress and your legislators. But if you don't have that level of power yet, don't feel like defeated or disappointed. I think it's important to really to stay at that grind and to do those day to day and you know, target smaller institutions, using house parties, doing, you know, just talking to local nonprofit organizations, doing things at the library. I mean, those things, they don't feel like big organizing accomplishments, but they actually add up a lot over time. Donna, do you have anything to add to that, or?
Yeah, absolutely. And especially, you know, I'll just add that in Indiana, what a fabulous group you've got in the Hoosiers for a Common Sense Health Plan, headed up by Rob and Karen Stone, who are just fabulous activists for single payer. I spent a little time in the state doing, we played a little bit of, not a little mischief, but a lot of mischief with Anthem Blue Cross shareholder meeting. Karen and Rob are shareholders of Anthem and really fought them. So there's lots of really good ways you can organize. Sometimes in some very unexpected ways, when you don't have big numbers, you can leverage those numbers to make a big statement. So if you want some more information, I'm sure Ben and I can work with you to come up with a few ideas and strategies for early on, but great suggestions, Ben. Thank you.
Yeah, and we're Healthcare Now is working on developing a sort of a step-by-step guide for new groups and small groups for sort of expanding at those early stages, and we're going to try and we've been planning to get this off the ground later next year, but given all the fight back in the organizing we're going to have to do quickly, we're trying to accelerate that and get it off the ground early next year. So I'll follow up with you all on that. We have an unlisted phone number, so just wait until you hear that you're unmuted and jump in. Go right ahead.
Is this Mark? Okay,
so, yes, go right ahead.
Yeah, it's Mark in California, and I think both the Democrats and the Republicans would like a lot more support if they stopped discriminating against specific diseases, so not just having universal health care, but stop doing gross discrimination against things like me, which is myalgic encephalomyelitis. So I voted for Eric Swalwell because he supports research into this disease that affects a million in the U.S., especially women. And I know people who supported McCain, and I give them credit for that because he supports it too. I voted for Republican in the state of California, Catherine Baker, because she supports fairer disease funding, whereas right now even Boxer and Pelosi and even Clinton when she was there were grossly discriminating against people with myalgic encephalomyelitis, also called chronic fatigue syndrome, that gets like 500 times less funding versus some other diseases. And even though it's one of the worst diseases for chronic diseases, knows costs huge amounts. So we have to be getting all our Democrats and Republicans bipartisan to reasonably fund at NIH and HHS level diseases and stop discriminating against women, because this is 75% a female disease versus some other diseases get much more funding that are more male diseases, and that would help get more people interested in this. I did live in Canada for 3 years, and you do want to make sure we have coverage for the less common diseases. It's great, including like in California too, Kaiser's great, but not if you have very specialized needs. You have to make sure you have enough money from the whole economy to cover some of that also. That's it.
Thank you for that. I really appreciate it. I have Crohn's disease, which is in sort of a similar category as chronic fatigue syndrome, in that no one exactly knows the causes, and there's just need for a tremendous amount of research. So I really appreciate those comments. Sorry about that. Again, quick on my mute trigger finger there. I'm going to take a couple of other comments, and then we're going to close this down. And I'm sorry we're not going to get to everybody, but please email us after the call if you have comments and questions, and we will get back to you with them. Phone number ending in 1298. Go right ahead. You still with us? All right, moving on. Phone number ending in 3213.
Oh, hello, that must be me. Yeah, I'd like to remain anonymous, but I'm from southeastern Pennsylvania. I also have a lot of those types of conditions that you were just talking about. And I'm wondering generally what's going to happen to those of us who are very dependent on, who take a lot of meds and are dependent upon Medicare Part D. I mean, I'm sure that both parties realize that Medicare Part D exists, and that if it's suddenly cut, there will be a lot of people detoxing in the streets or dying. And, you know, is there some sort of, I mean, I'm not expecting an emergency fund because they're cutting it anyway, but, you know, what do people like us do if they do something like this on January the 4th, or the disabled and the very ill?
That's a good question. I'm going to direct this to Lori because, as folks may know, Part D, of course, was passed under the Bush administration, but the Affordable Care Act did start closing the donut hole, and I think the goal was eventually for the donut hole to be totally closed by the Affordable Care Act. Lori, can you tell us, has the GOP talked about rolling back that part of the Affordable Care Act? I don't feel like I've heard anything about Part D.
No, I want to say two things about this. First, that is one of the provisions of the ACA, the donut hole set to close in 2020. That's one of those that might escape some of this madness of what's to come. So I haven't heard anything about their plans to mess with Part D, but this gets into another issue that Senator Sanders and a lot of other Democrats care strongly about, which is drug prices, which I'm just going to talk about for half a second because I know we're short on time. But, you know, part of the reason that we have these problems with Part D is because Part D can't directly negotiate drug prices. You know, Medicare cannot negotiate drug prices. This is a massive giveaway to the pharmaceutical companies that was part of the Part D legislation. And, again, this is something that Trump has made friendly noises towards in the past. And we have seen, you know, Senator Sanders and Representative Cummings and a lot of others have really been hammering away on the drug pricing issue for the past couple years. And we were finally starting to see some movement on this. We've seen a huge shift in public opinion, or at least even awareness on the part of the public on the issue of drug pricing and how outrageous some of these prices are. And that is, I can promise you, that is absolutely something that we are going to continue pushing in the next Congress. We're going to keep beating the drum on these drug prices.
So if it happens January 4th, we should just try to save up some money and hope for the best. I'm sorry, I cut you off. What? Hello?
Yeah, no.
On my phone.
It sounds like the answer from Lori is that there's not noises from the GOP, at least that they're going to go after Part D right away.
Good.
It's the Affordable Care Act that's under attack immediately, and then Medicaid and Medicare are things they've made noises about in the past and will likely to do something, but it's going to be further down the road. We're not sure yet whether they're going to do anything around Part D or not. So Okay. I think those one of the issues we need to remain vigilant about, but we don't know that they're going to be gunning for it yet. But great.
Okay.
Great,
thank you.
All right. And thank you, everyone, not only for joining us on the evening before Thanksgiving, but basically almost everyone stayed on this call as we ran late for 15 minutes, and I apologize for that. But thanks, everyone, so much for your time. Obviously, the most important part of this that's going to come out in the next month or two is going to be coming up with an organizing campaign to advance the single-payer movement in this next year or two. And you're going to hear about that from PDA, you're going to hear about it from Healthcare Now, you're going to hear about it from PNHP and all of our national allies. So this is not a time to sort of rest on our laurels or to despair. We're really going to have to fight back in the next year, and we're going to need all hands on deck. So thanks, everyone, for joining us. Hope you all have a great holiday, and we will be in touch with you soon. Take care.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Donna. Bye, all.